literally millions or billions of ordinary stars in our own galaxy, galaxies of all sorts. And these quasars that we're talking about are indeed extremely rare. We've surveyed something a little less than one-tenth of the sky, and we've found a handful of these things. They're very, very rare. And so you have to select out that rare quasar out of the literally billions of star images and ordinary galaxy images that one has. These particular objects manifest themselves, as it turns out, by being extremely red in their color. And that is indeed caused by the redshift through a slightly long story. But in any case, that is the criterion that we use to pull out that needle from the haystack.
Okay, well, let's break up this long story, because, Richard, I think we ought to explain what this redshift is. These quasars that are very far away, it's taken light, as Michael has mentioned, about 13 billion years to get to us. Now, during that time, the universe has expanded in size by a factor of about... And as a result of that, if you like, if you had a ruler that was emitted by, which is 1 meter long, that was emitted by those quasars, by the time it got to us, the ruler would be 7 meters in length. And so exactly the same effect happens to light or radiation. And so you stretch the blue light, and as you stretch it, it becomes red. And that's the origin of this red...
the stretching effect.
So the older, the further away, the redder it is.
Yeah. Now, there's actually...
It's very handy if the universe comes colour-coded for you, isn't it, astronomers?
It's fortunate, and obviously if it wasn't like that, we wouldn't be able to actually find these objects. And that's a philosophical question, possibly.
That's right. This reddening... I mean, the other aspect of that needle in the haystack is that there are objects out there that are intrinsically red, that are red not because of this redshift effect, but it's just the way they are. And so, interestingly enough, among those category of objects are extremely cool, very nearby stars. Nearby, again, in astronomical terms, only a few tens of light years instead of 10 billion light years, rather different scales. So we find ourselves trying to sort between, as it were, the most distant objects in the universe and among the closest stars at the same time.
So this is the business about sort of the hay looking like the needle that you're,
exactly,
that you're,
exactly.
You're looking for. So where did these ones that you found, where were they in the sky?
Well, there's in various places, there, sort of in any direction you look, there's the potential of finding them. One of them is in the constellation Ursa Major, the Big Dipper, should be familiar to
all. The plows, we say here, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. yes, indeed. And, of course, it's enormously too faint to be seen with the naked eye, and really takes large telescopes to see the very... faint light that we can see. This is a tremendously luminous object. It's giving off a huge amount of energy, but of course that energy is coming from such an enormous distance that we perceive it as extremely faint.
But you say you've already found these other quasars, yet this was quite a big deal last Sunday when this announcement was made about these particular
yes.
quasars. So what do they tell us that the other quasars that we've already found don't tell us? Is it just the fact that we go back a little bit further in time?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, this is just another small step in that regard. One of the games that one plays here is trying to understand what the physical nature of the universe was at that very early time. One might imagine that it was in a different physical state. And one of the things that one can infer by looking at these quasars is that perhaps the universe was not, that the gas that exists in the universe was neutral. That is, the hydrogen consisted of protons and electrons going around them. We have very strong evidence that today most of the hydrogen in the universe is ionized, that the proton and the electron have been separated from each other. And it turns out that we can use the spectrum of these quasars to determine that maybe we're seeing a transition back to an earlier time when things were neutral. And that's an important stage in the evolution of objects forming in the universe.
Well, I'm still not clear about this. You mentioned about this sort of smooth universe and the bang,
yes.
And this is a kind of, you know, this homogeneous mass. What actually caused the quasars in all this?
Well, that's an interesting question. Again, as I said, we don't have by any means a complete understanding of how these first objects might have formed. If you try to infer how large this object is to be as luminous as it appears, you come up with numbers that they may have a mass several billion times the mass of our own sun. Those are American billions, I think. That is one followed by nine zeros.
Don't worry, well, that's taking over now. Okay, nobody uses the European billion anymore, okay. But carry on, yes.
Okay, in any case. That's a huge amount of mass to put into a black hole. We have a rather poor understanding of how black holes form in the first place, and then the question, putting that mystery aside, how we've formed such an enormous one of many billions of solar masses, many billions times the mass of the sun, is really very poorly understood, because we have very little time to do it. Again, only 800 million years. And again, we start with almost perfectly smooth, and we have to form, as it were, the densest conceivable object in the universe, the extreme opposite to that very, very smooth. So that's one sense in which these objects are so mysterious, or sort of point to us towards a real lack of understanding of how these objects might have formed.
So, Richard, these sounds like these astronomy anomalies raise almost as many questions as they answer.
Yes, indeed they do. And I mean, one of the amazing things I find in recent times that we've actually been discovering smaller, what we call actually mini quasars, even in the Milky Way in which we live. And so this phenomena of the very luminous ones is actually sort of everywhere at some level. But in some sense, the reason why we do science is hopefully to find things that we don't understand. And so I think that's what makes the whole subject very exciting.
I think your team at Cambridge, you're looking at slightly different aspects of quasars, aren't you, from what Michael's looking at?
Yeah, currently, in some sense, I mean, a number of years ago, we carried out a survey for quasars at slightly lower redshifts. And what we've been doing over the last number of years is to use these quasars. They're very bright, and they sort of act as like a mass spectrograph, and they illuminate material between us and the quasars. And so objects like the Milky Way, which are too faint to see at these large distances, leave a sort of an absorption imprint on the light of these very bright sort of searchlights.
So hang on, if I've got this right then, you effectively supply the magnifying glass and the quasars supply the torch, and you're able to do the kind of detective work in the universe.
It's looking under lampposts at some level, and that is sort of many years to look at the sort of chemical composition of the universe in the regions between us and the quasars.
Michael, as technology advances, how much further back will we be able to peer? Now we can look within 800 million years of the Big Bang. Will we eventually get closer and closer to it, and maybe even be able to see some traces, direct traces of it?
Well, we can even now see direct traces using a rather different technique, using the cosmic microwave radiation. Basically, all the heat of that Big Bang leaves over a remnant radiation that we can detect directly, and was actually discovered in the 1960s. And indeed, when we study that, we're looking there back at light that left...
That was first emitted something like 300,000 years after the Big Bang. It's not coming from individual objects, but in some real sense coming from the universe as a whole. And that is extremely smooth. That is why we believe the statements I was making before, that the universe started out very smooth. That radiation is tremendously smooth, and the subject of a whole other discussion.
And Michael, that is where we smoothly have to leave it as well, I'm afraid. Michael Strauss, Richard McMahon, thanks. Next time I stare at the Great Bear, I'll think about the furthest away quasar on Earth within it. Next week, we couldn't be further away from quasars. We're looking at insect discrimination.